The mules are in the corral. Welcome to Mule Talk, and I'm Cindy K. Roberts, your host.
And our author, TV personality, and world-renowned mule trainer, Meredith Hodges of the Lucky Three Ranch. We have never run out of content every week, so of course now we're talking about breeding mules and how to prepare your jack, so nobody knows it better than you.
Well, thank you for saying so. I've had plenty of experience. I did the breeding thing on my mother's farm out in California. It was the Windy Valley Ranch, and we bred 30 mules a year out there on 1,000 acres. We had 60 head of brood mares. We had 5 jacks, 7 genets. So we did a few genets, too, to produce more jacks. Got to find out a whole lot about these guys that way. And on this farm, we not only did live cover, but we also did AI, of course, because we had 60 head of mares that we had to go through. The other thing I might say, too, is we had a lot of an education in selection, because we had a lot of clients that wanted a lot of different kinds of mules. So when my mother was putting the ranch together, she went out and got all different kinds of breeds of mares. About the only ones that she really didn't have were the warm bloods. And I finally bred for Turkaner mules here when I got to Colorado 6 years later. But we had Tennessee Walkers, we had Fox Trotters, we had Quarter Horses, Appaloosas, Paints, Morgan. The Morgans, oddly enough, were really hard to get to settle. We had Arabians, we had Thoroughbreds. I remember one Thoroughbred mare. They're not entirely very smart sometimes. She had pipe fencing out there, and one of the Thoroughbred mares got her tail stuck in the fence.
Ooh.
And pulled off the tip of her tailbone trying to get away from it. So then she perpetually had a really short tail after that. The horses always have to show you how stupid they can be.
Okay, case in point.
Never see a mule. A mule would never do that.
Nope.
The mules that they got their tails stuck in the fence, it's just kind of wrapped around the post and the rail, you know. But if a mule did that, they'd just stand there and wait for you to come and untangle
sure.
it or something, you know. They're a bit smarter, but horses just go into this frenzy and they end up hurting themselves worse.
Mm.
So it was a little disconcerting. And that was back in the day, too, when we had to tube worm everybody. Paste wormer was not existent.
Oh.
So when it was worming week, I had to go help the vet with 100 head of animals that were there. And we got it done, you know, as often as we need to. We did it about every 6 months. But that was quite a chore, let me tell you. But quite a learning experience as well. I also learned, like we talked about in the last interview, got to know a lot about donkey behavior, and particularly jacks. And jacks, there was really, out of all those jacks my mother had, there was only one that was really kind of vicious, and that was Windy Valley Adam, who was Little Jack Horner's sire. And I swear to God that Little Jack Horner, if he had those genes, was never going to act like that one. But that one was solely, Adam was used primarily and only for breeding. He never got any training to do anything else. And that's why I talked a little about having different things for your jack to do besides just breeding mares. They need a purpose in life that isn't just based on being used, you know, for a singular purpose. And particularly when the hormones are high and then they've got to be forced to do these things. And it's quite invasive when you're doing collection for AI, too. It's, you know, you can kind of see that these animals really do feel like they're just being used.
Hmm.
And they are.
Okay.
That it's quite simple. They are. And I decided that wasn't going to be the case with my jacks. And I bred for jacks, too. I had Excelsior, Blue Baron, Excalibur from my genets. Actually, it was XL when he was born. Serendipity chased me out of the stall. But, you know, I learned a lot about what they would let you do and what they wouldn't. And I learned how to negotiate with them. And when you're breeding these jacks and everything, I know a lot of people think, oh, well, I got a really nice mare, and I don't want to pay a high dollar for a horse, so these jacks stud fees are really low, so I think I'll just go and find a jack and breed my mare to a jack, and then, you know, we'll just get another mule that way. It'll be a lot cheaper to do it that way, but you know, there's so much more to breeding than that, because if you breed who you think is a good mare, she may not be all that. And then you have to consider the conformation, the temperament, and the disposition of the jack, because he's going to contribute a lot to that mix, too. And if you get a mule that turns out with crooked legs, bad disposition, bad temperament, not much athletic ability because his legs are crooked and bad feet, and there's just all kinds of things that can go wrong. Now, you need to do your homework on how to evaluate these jacks. And in part two, we're going to talk about the mares, but right now I want to talk about the jacks. And the jacks need to have a basically balanced conformation, very similar to a horse, but not quite like a horse, because donkeys are not like horses. Donkeys have steeper shoulders and steeper hips. Many of them have crooked legs, and a lot of them have feet that are too small. Their heads can be too large. Their neck can be too short. And the one thing that you really want to look for in a, you know, to contribute to a mule is really big ears. The ears are the crowning glory of a donkey jack. And we had some really amazing ones at my mom's ranch. Windy Valley Gray Cloud was a big gray jack. He was about, oh, probably 56 inches, and his ears were just huge. Blackjack, the same thing. Dexter, the same thing. Dexter was a spotted jack, but he had beautiful ears, and all those jacks had beautiful bodies. A lot of things that you will see on jacks are long bodies and short necks. And when you're doing your assessment, and I do have a Mule Crossing article about assessing balance and shape in the equine, those rules work for all equines, horses, mules, donkeys, ponies. And you need an animal where the center of gravity is right down the middle of the torso. You know, when you do that, there is equal distance back to the flanks and back to the forearm from that center of gravity, and that the jack has enough length of neck so that he can arc his body and stretch his spine so he can really reach well underneath his body with his hindquarters and have his hind feet step in to the footprints of the front feet. So it creates a balanced movement. And when you do this, you don't have animals with rough gaits. The rough gaits come from animals that are really not put together that well. And it takes a long time and a lot of research to, you know, really get what you're looking for, especially when you're looking at an animal with hair on it, because the hair can create an optical illusion and make you think things are straighter when they really aren't. And the other optical illusion that takes place is when you have a paint jack or a paint horse. It's really sometimes very difficult to see if everything is straight on the legs and everything with all that hair on it if they're not clipped. So as a judge, I learned how to look right through that hair and see that body and see what the skeletal structure of that animal is. And as in horses, the jacks also need to have a really nice, refined head. Now, most of them will have a Roman nose, and in a mule, that is a redeeming quality. They can be very, very handsome with a Roman nose. It's not a defect. I know we like to see heads on thoroughbreds, quarter horses, and Arabs more like the Arabian heads. And, of course, the quarter horses came from the original foundation stock of the Arabians. And it gives them very pretty heads. But in a donkey or a mule, it actually just keeps the head more refined. And even though they may have a Roman nose, it might be quite attractive because of the way that they are. Anyway, the heads, when they're balanced on the body, they shouldn't be oversized. Mm. You know, with the mammoth donkeys, too, you want to be careful with the mammoth donkeys because they're so big and they can be so klutzy if they're not balanced. They need a good length of neck. They need a head that's not oversized or with too much bone. You see a lot of bone over the eyebrows of the mammoth donkeys, and you'll see that same thickness of bone in the joints in the legs, and it makes them kind of clumsy, really. When you pair that off with a narrow chest and narrow hips, you know, looking from behind and in front, it's really an oddly balanced weight. And this is why it's really important to do core strength training with your mammoth donkeys and your larger mules that have been bred from mammoths, because they've got that thickness of bone, but they don't tend to have the thickness of the fatty covering that they need over that to balance the weight when they're doing athletic kinds of things. The jack should not be too narrow through the chest or through the rib cage, and a lot of them are, or in the rear quarters. He can also be too wide in these areas if he's overfed. And a lot of donkeys are overfed. They're left out on pasture, and they really shouldn't be. It's better if you can keep them in a dirt lot and feed them accordingly. And I use the grass hay to balance their weight. I use their oats mix, which I give everybody. They tell you not to feed grain to donkeys, but I think you need to, because our ground is not rotated properly anymore, and it loses a lot of the nutrients in it where you grow hay. And we know this from growing hay on our property. We do what we can, but you can't put all those nutrients back into the ground the way you think you can. You have to get those things into the animals. So we feed a minimum. With the mammoths, we can feed up to 2 cups of oats. People feed gallons of oats.
Oh, I know
they don't need that, because I guess they think it's going to put weight on them or something, but it really doesn't.
No.
Equine Senior, they tell you, is going to put weight on them, but it doesn't. At the same time, you know, it may have the nutrients in there to put on the weight, but it's sucking the fluid out of their system.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't put enough water on those dehydrated things to supplement the fluids that an animal puts through their digestive tract to digest all that dry food. They're built for that.
Yeah.
And if you put dehydrated pellets or hay cubes or stuff in them, it's just going to suck the life out of them, is what it's going to do. So what you want to do is try to avoid that. And Show-Glo vitamins are a pellet, but on a mammoth, you would only maximum feed 1 ounce of those in a cup, and maybe a cup and a half of oats, fed once a day. And that's just to make sure that they get their daily vitamins and mineral requirements. And then what I do, too, is I will leave a trace mineral salt block in every pen where they're going to be, so that they can go to it anytime they want, because I have found that their natural instincts dictate what they need and when they do it.
I don't
think that people can determine that. I don't think researchers or veterinarians can predict that. I think that's something that needs to be left up to the animals. You just need to leave the things out there for them to be able to get to. And Trace Mineral Salt Blocks has all of the different minerals and salt that they need, you know, at any given time. And if they're free to go to it, they can do it when they want to. They don't have to be looking for it in the dirt, because that's what they will do. You know, if they're out on the prairie or up in the mountainous foothills and stuff like that, you see donkeys that are digging around and in the dirt looking for their vitamins and their nutrients, and they eat all kinds of weeds and stuff out there too. And those trace mineral salt blocks must have everything that they need, because my animals are not getting any really bad vices or anything like that, and they're not acting like they need anything. Granted, they do eat their own manure once in a great while, but that manure goes through them, and what's left in it, you know, that they poop, often is just stuff that they have not processed in their intestines, and so they can actually get nutrients from it.
Okay.
It's called coprophagy.
Okay.
And they'll do that, you know, in a dirt lot, but not extensively if they're fed right. And if the salt blocks are there, they'll go do that. And if there's any hay that they have left over, they'll pick that up. They'll go around the fence line if it's, you know, if they've got a turnout pen on the other side of the fence, and they'll grab grass under the fence and stuff. And they keep themselves healthy that way. It's not bad for them to eat their own manure, as long as that's not all they're doing, you know. But that's also why it's really important to clean your pens. And if it's a larger pen, we clean our larger pens once a week. And that way the manure that they're eating is not old, and it's not going to have mold in it and other things that could be detrimental to them.
Okay.
It keeps it pretty clean, and like keeping something in a refrigerator, you know, only it's not. It's in the dirt.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go to the fridge for something like that.
Yeah, right. Right. So, again, talking about the conformation of the jacks, you want a jack that has as much angle to the hip and shoulders as possible. Now, they're never going to be that 45-degree angle that the horses have, but you want to get that as close as possible, because that is going to give them their athletic ability in the offspring. You know, they need to be able to move. And something that is really post-legged, if the angles in the hips and shoulders are too steep, it is going to be very much like they will get post-legged in their legs and won't be able to flex in the joints in the hocks and the knees and the fetlocks. And they need to get that kind of animation going through the joints to be able to really move and have athletic ability. And a lot of mammoths, you know, because of that thickness of the bone, see, the jack contributes to the thickness of the bone. And so a lot of people, they think that the mammoth jacks, because they're big, are going to give them a bigger mule. And that's not necessarily true. What they do is they give you a heavier mule, which isn't a bad thing. You know, when you cross them out on thoroughbred horses, and in the case of my testing the warm bloods, it gives them a thicker bone in their legs and everything, which makes it more desirable when you're going to do those really stressful kind of dressage and combined training. Gives them a lot of action. They can bend in their joints very well when their hips and shoulders are at a 45. And you need that thickness of bone when you're going to get into jumping and stress that you do in endurance, because that you get spring to your step from a large standard and a standard jack, which kind of takes the concussion off the bones. But when you're galloping 3 miles over 20 jumps or 30 jumps, that's a lot of stress put on the animal, and they need thicker bones for that.
Okay.
So you have to assess, you know, with the jack, what you're going to be doing. The other thing is, let's just say you want your animal, maybe not for that, but for packing. If they're going to carry heavy loads, they're going to need more thickness of bone. But you may want to breed to a shorter mare, because you don't want a pack mule that's 16, two hands high to load with all the stuff you're going to have to load on that animal. You want to keep them low to the ground so that it's easy to pack them. You know, so that's a consideration too. But if you want something that's going to be a really nice show animal and a good dressage animal, maybe not jumping, but dressage, you might want the more refinement and the narrower bones that come with a large standard or a standard jack, and breed those to your saddle horses that are between probably 14.3 and 16.2 hands, and you will get a gorgeous show animal, because by not having that thickness of bone, it's going to make their head, their neck, their bodies look much more trim. They won't have that heavy bone over the eyebrows, and you're going to get a lot prettier face and head and neck and everything, and a really streamlined body on your mule. And then, like I was talking before, no foot, no donkey, no foot, no mule, no foot, no horse is quite literally true. You want to make darn sure that that animal has a balanced foot, that he doesn't have any faults like being buck-kneed, calf-kneed, tied up in the knee, round bones, short, straight pasterns, coon-footed, too long a cannon bone, sickle hock, splay-footed, knock-kneed, bow-legged, pigeon-toed, broken forward or backward feet, or too straight through the stifle and the hock. These are all serious faults and should be avoided when breeding.
Oh yeah.
A little bit cow hocked is probably okay, because it does afford them a lot better lateral action. When they're a little too post-legged, you know, a straight-legged, they can kind of get stuck, you know. All of these other faults, they are just not good. And a lot of these donkeys will have those faults. Your feet, the coat should be smooth and inclined to look sleek, and the hooves are slightly oily. They should not be contracted, but well sprung, but more upright than a horse. They need to have a well extended, healthy frog. That means that in a donkey, you have a lot more heel left, and in a mule, that a lot more heel than you do in your horses. A lot of horses sit right down on the ground, and the frog needs to come in contact with the ground so that it can keep pumping blood through the foot. Any things that you see happening to the hoof should be definitely inspected carefully. You don't want any weakness in the hoof itself. White line is a common problem, and I think in my opinion it's coming from feeding donkeys food that is a little bit too rich for them.
Okay.
And it causes the hooves to start to collapse and get misshapen, causes stress rings in it. The hooves are too soft. They're not hard. They need to be hard. And a donkey with an adequate heel on it will bring the frog to the ground the way it grows underneath, it should. So these are all things you need to kind of keep an eye on. I talked a little bit about the head and neck of the jack. He does contribute that, and he needs to have a balanced body himself, so that the offspring, when bred to a mare that is balanced, they will be balanced. Too long a back is not really all that desirable, because there's too much of a spread between the withers and the croup. And if you're riding in that, it can really get to be a real problem, especially with donkeys. They tend to be rather weak through their backs, and when they get too long, what happens is they start getting lordosis or sway back really bad as they age. It gets worse and worse and worse. You don't want a back that's too short, but you don't want a back that's too long either. And if the jack has either one of those, don't use him for breeding. We have too many animals that are being bred that are, you know, have too many faults, and they come with problems, which comes with vet bills later on.
Right.
And so, it's better to just be smart about this in the beginning. And people who are only breeding once should just take their mare to a reputable breeder who knows and has jacks standing that are really nice jacks. They should all also have the capacity to collect their jacks and free semen and be able to give it to you and send it to you long distance so your vet can artificially inseminate your mares. Only a facility that's set up to do this would be a reputable breeding facility. People that just get into it, you know, so they can sell mules are not doing the world a favor by breeding a lot of mules with animals that are substandard. Too many of them do end up going to the slaughterhouse, and it's just heartbreaking. You know, people think of it in terms of money, but you don't get money like you think you're going to get from animals that are that substandard. It just doesn't happen. Then you also, these jacks, when you're looking at their neck, make sure they don't have a U-neck, because they will not be able to stretch the spine and arc the back upward to carry a rider, and that's converse to the sway back. They need to be able to do that. They need to be able to arch that spine, which also enables their hind legs to step under them and reach the center of gravity underneath their torso, halfway underneath their torso. So that has to happen, and because then when the animal is moving, he will be able to step under and elevate the front legs, and with a 45 at the shoulder, he should be able to pick that front end up, bend those knees, and then extend forward, which will increase his stride and his balance when he's moving. So it's really, really important that you set your animals up for that by educating yourself and researching what is a good combination in breeding. Now, regardless of how lovely and balanced he may be, he may possess genes that produce offspring with many, many conformational faults. Usually the faults will skip a generation, so when you have a really pretty jack, he may not have had a really pretty sire or a really pretty dam. Since donkeys have been so inbred, it's hard to really predict what there's going to be. The other thing that's a problem is that people have not kept very good records on the breeding of these animals.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So you can't really look in the background and say, oh, well, yeah, this is impressive bred, so therefore. Mm-hmm. And even this problem existed with the impressive quarter horses. They were, you know, inbred because they were so, you know, perfect.
Sure.
That they actually inbred this impressive disease they can get.
Yeah.
That runs through all the impressive horses. So, you know, you got to be aware that these problems can exist and take the time to go out, look at the offspring of these jacks. What have they been producing? What have their sires been producing? If you can take the time to take a trip around and find out who has these offspring, take the time to go and look at them. Because stronger traits and faults that they can have will come through the offspring, and they will show. So you want to do the same thing with the mares. You know, who's her sire? Who's her dam? What is their breeding record? And get whatever you can. And we're lucky today to have mule breeding registries that are fairly good. American Donkey and Mule Society has done an extensive registry. Now, I know they're kind of backing off right now, but that registry should still be preserved. The American Mule Association has a good registry. NASMA, North American Saddle Mule Association, has a good registry for show mules. And so, you know, take the time to look into these registries. There is the Miniature Donkey Registry. We have a lot of registries, but that's because we've developed a lot of mules and donkeys over the years, particularly in modern times. We didn't think that these animals were going to be used as much when the industrial age came through, but I've done a lot of work with a lot of people, and now mules and donkeys are more popular than ever.
Yeah.
Because people are finding new uses for them, and they're doing extraordinary things with them, you know, everything from trick training. Boy, trick training a mule or a donkey is so much more impressive. The things that they can do, you know, compared to horses.
Right.
It's really cool to see these people doing all these different things with their mules and donkeys. Because they are extraordinary.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't see it very often. Probably the most important thing is the disposition of the jack. There's a difference between the jack's natural instincts, his personality, and his acquired personal attitudes. So learn to distinguish between a natural instinct, a distinctive personality trait, and behavior that was the result of improper handling. I've found that most donkeys, they're very cooperative and very affectionate when being patiently and fairly treated, but some can also be more obstinate about things than others. So remember, in addition to the inherited traits of the jack, it is the mare or the genet from which the offspring learns most of his behaviors while he's growing up. So learn to make educated choices concerning your breeding stock, and in order to maintain the integrity of the breed, use only jacks with the best conformation for breeding.
Yeah, that makes sense. Wow.
Doesn't it?
Sure.
Doesn't it? And make sure, I will state it again, that the jack has more to do in his life than just breed mares. And also, don't think that you can just throw the jack out in a pen with mares and have him breed them. Because they will intimidate him. And so even a young, healthy mare can be quite intimidating. And little Jack Horner, after he had bred mares for years, I decided to try and pasture breeding his four genets. And they cornered him, and he was terrified. What am I going to do with all these aggressive females, and they're all in heat? I thought, this is not a good idea. I learned how to train him to breed mares and my other jacks, too, so that it wasn't quite as intimidating to them. Because there were some mares that were just wild and woolly, and they didn't want it. He was afraid. He'd hide in the corner. And here's the thing about jacks is that they can take up to 3 to 4 hours to breed a mare, and you just stand there and wait. And wait. And because this is an unnatural act to them.
Well, yeah.
So I figured out that you need to really plan for it And you need to do the things where you're actually negotiating with your Jack and teaching him that he can be confident in breeding the mares. He doesn't need to sit there and peruse it like donkeys like to peruse everything. I mean, you can start perusing when the sun comes up and not be done with your solution till the sun goes down. You know, right. And so I started talking with little Jack Horner, and he's the one that taught me that it's a good idea. His offspring, I had to learn to teach them to breed mares. So I decided when they were very young, right after they were weaned, I put them in a pen one-on-one, one mare, 25 years or older, so that her chances of settling, if he bred her, were slim to none. And I just left them in there for 2 years, so they got used to being around mares. I kept the genets on the other side of the barn where they couldn't see them. They could probably still smell them because they've got an amazing sense of smell. You know, if they don't get to really integrate with the genets, then they don't learn that that's what they're supposed to breed. If they're not seen, they're only smelled and heard once in a while, it's not a big deal. The other thing that people told me, too, is that, oh, don't get your Jack and your stallions together because the Jack will kill the stallion. Little Jack Horner had been breeding mares forever, and my stallion, Kip, DeBeau, registered quarter horse, had been teasing them. They both had interaction with the mares, and so after a while, I put them next to each other during turnout. And I went out one day, and little Jack Horner had jumped the fence and gotten in with Kip.
Uh-oh.
They were just grazing, and they were cool, but there weren't any mares around them, see.
Two bachelors.
So they were fun. Yeah, two batches, batching it, you know. Yeah. Eating up the grass during turnout, and then I went out and got them, and everything was fine. And I wouldn't say that should be a regular thing.
Sure.
It just so happened that I had trained them well enough for good manners during handling, both on the ground, under saddle, on the drive lines and everything.
Cool.
That, like all my mules, they learned their good manners, and they did not get aggressive with each other. Because they knew that would make the mama mad, and they really don't like it when the mama gets mad. Mm. She just looks like a crazy lady. She doesn't do anything but look crazy. You know, when I'm jumping around and yelling at them, they go, oh, my God, what's the matter with you? You know? And then they just stand still, and they look at me, and they forget about each other. You know, so that's the best way I know to get them to stop fighting and acting stupid, you know. So I decided that I was just going to have to teach little Jack Horner how to breed mares and how to do it quickly. So what I did was, we have this area in the tack barn. We had a breeding chute in there with a platform behind it. It's one that my mother's husband designed. It's open. It's not like a stanchion. But you put the mare, you open the side of it, you stick the mare in there. It's open all the way across the top. And there's a bar to measure how wide the mare is behind it. And the platform is behind because we were primarily using the large standard donkey, little Jack Horner. And so what I did was, I learned that if I went ahead and cleaned the mare with a hand towel, and I just did it, first of all, just to, you know, of course, she's peeing and everything, and I would catch the pee in the hand towel and then turn it over and get another one to clean her and just dip it in water and clean her off. But I would take the hand towel that she peed on, and I'd put it on the hitch rail about 10 feet away. Mm-hmm. Then I would go get little Jack Horner. I would bring him in, put a drop nose band on him so that he could not grab the mare with his teeth, except just a little bit, just to hang on. And I would take him to that hitch rail and let him sniff it. That would usually make him drop down within 20 minutes. And then I would just wash him with regular water. No soap or anything. You don't want to use that. Just water when he dropped, warm water, went ahead and washed him off, and then, of course, he sucked it back up again. But then he went and resumed sniffing that rag and dropped down again in another 20 minutes. Then we could go ahead and cover the mare. So I was never in there covering mares for more than an hour. This works wonders. And the mares don't get scared because he's got that drop nose band on that keeps his mouth fairly shut so he can't hurt them.
Right.
That's really important.
Yeah.
You know, and then I just let him sit on the mare after he's done. Let him sit on the mare until he's done and wants to jump back. And when he did, and he hit the platform again behind the mare, then, of course, he sticks his nose. Did I do my job? Isn't this cool? And I go, oh, yes, LJ, this is super cool. Now would you like some oats? And I give him the oats for doing a job well done. And he'd take his oats, and then we would walk off the platform and back to the barn. And he was a very willing breeder that way, and that's the way you want your Jack to be. And the only way to get that is to really give him other jobs to do, like riding, driving, whatever else, so that he's not just being used for breeding, and teach him his good manners. And if you just use this approach, your Jack will be a willing breeder, and he will be a good breeder, and he will produce outstanding offspring.
Wow. That, you know, this is almost going to be rated R on this episode.
Almost, but that depends on where you come from.
Well, that's true, and this is very educational.
It is. And when you're raised on a farm, you see all that stuff.
Well, yeah, this is an educational
program. It's normal behavior, and actually it's normal human behavior, too.
Well, sure.
We just like to hide it.
Yeah.
And if we don't hide it, then people get perverted.
Oh, Lord.
What can I say? But that's in somebody's mind.
Yeah.
You know, that's in your mind. You know, this breeding thing, it's important to think about the way that these animals are bred and that it's done cleanly, in good taste, because, again, the animals don't like being used.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And they know when you're doing your best.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing the best thing for them.
Okay. Meredith, wow, you've been wonderful. Thank you again. It's lunchtime.
It is. You have a great rest of the day, Cindy.
Meredith's website is lucky3ranch.com, and you can call her at 1-800-816-7566. And I can be reached through my website, everycowgirlsdream.com.
Gotta go. My mule is looking for me.
Mule Talk is an Every Cowgirl's Dream production.